with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah, well, howdy. I would like to find the person who came up with the idea of ads that run video and audio the minute that you open a page, and I would like to strangle that person, not to death or anything, but just till they turn nice and freaking purple. Sorry about the noise and everything there. Sheesh. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump in and be part of the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Good evening to everyone who was in there at the beginning of the program. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening, Sparky and Texas Betsy. A little ring for, you know, the timely. Yes, yes, indeed. That is, if you want to get into the chat room, I'm sorry, I'm a little addled from the stupid ad. If you want to get involved, jump into the chat room, all you got to do is go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and there you'll go. You'll be part of the online multimedia extravaganza, the big fun that we have. For the 3 hours, the program is live every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evening. This, of course, is a Friday evening. It is the 29th day of May, 2015. Yes, this program is live. It's always live. Yeah. I get emails saying, are you on tonight? I'm always on. But it is, of course, Friday on the front porch. And that means that here in about an hour, we will crank up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and the stress line. And we will have our weekly extraordinary ordinary roundtable to cuss and discuss the events of the day. You know, I guess imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I was toddling around the metropolis that is this area in which I live earlier today. Who am I kidding? Ran up to the Wiggling Pig for a can of coffee for Agnes, and it was two for a dollar hot dog day too. They make their own hot dog buns up there at the Wiggling Pig, and dang, they're good. Please, no emails telling me about how awful hot dogs are. I know, but in the course of the driving around, I was of course tuned in to National Petroleum Radio. And heard, and I thought it was just delightful, a brand new segment, or a new-ish segment, on West Virginia Public Radio that apparently airs on Fridays between the time of 4:50 p.m. and 5 p.m. Guess what it's called? And again, it airs every Friday on West Virginia Public Radio. It's called The Front Porch. Well, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, I'm told. Throwing a few bucks our way for bogarting something that we've been doing for years, well, I guess that hasn't really occurred to them. Nah. Ay-yi-yi. But, yeah. Isn't that just charming? Speaking of throwing a buck our way, just to let you know, the fundraising goal for this evening is $460. We've made little strides all through the week toward keeping up, and this is what we have to do to finish May to the good. Because, of course, Moran Monday will be Moran Monday, June the 1st. So we need to raise $260 or $460 this evening via any combination, 23 at 20, 46 at 10, 10 at 46, 20 at 23, or, you know, 460 or 2 at 230 or 4 at 115. I'm really getting good at this ciphering on the fly, aren't I? Yeah. The PayPal interface, as you know, is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Never mind the more nosy fields there. You don't have to put anything in them. Just put in enough to get you to the next screen where you make all your PayPal choices. Or, of course, you can use the United States Postal Service. If you wish to send something through the mails, make it payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. Make it payable to the Horn and send it to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV25801. That is absolutely true, Carol Baker. West Virginia Public Radio may have a front porch, but they don't have a verjanda. No, they do not. I don't even know if you're allowed to say verjanda on terrestrial for-profit. And don't kid yourself. Public radio is for-profit, baby. That's why they've got all those ads from Northrop Grumman bombing foreign countries for American prosperity. We're Northrop Grumman and the various and sundry other disgusting defense contractors. Yeah. So it is. It's Friday on the Front Porch, and if you have never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, this is the real Friday on the Front Porch, except no substitutes. If you have never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, then by all means, we welcome your participation. The easiest way to do that is get on Skype, which is incredibly easy to use, not at all confusing, and not at all difficult to fire up. Get on Skype and send a contact request to, on Skype, Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk. And you will be he'll accept it, and then you'll be a part of the extraordinary ordinary roundtable. Cool, got it? Yeah. So all I can say as we begin the program this evening is, well, there are moments when I'm not entirely. We all know I'm skeptical about the metaphysical and read the book World of Mysticism. I think it's healthy. But there are times when I cannot help but jump in there next to Hamlet and say, you said a mouthful there, brother. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies. Why do I say this? Because I am utterly convinced at this point, as of yesterday, I am absolutely convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that somewhere in the nether realms, Bart Cop is sitting down drinking Chinako through a straw with the goddess of irony, and they are both cackling like hens about to lay 36 eggs at a time. Why? Two words. Denny Hastert. Those of you who read Bart Cop faithfully, and I was one of those, there's still a photo out there. Our good friend Tara Pterodactyl from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, who can also be found on Facebook, took it one evening when Malloy and I were in D.C. and I was wearing a T-shirt, courtesy of Bart Cop. It was a black T-shirt, had a picture of George W. Bush on the front, and it said, "I screwed everything up, but thanks for blaming the black guy." Mm-hmm. And it was perfect. It was perfect for the time. It's still perfect. But Bart Cop, and he, God only knows how many thousands of worst president ever T-shirts he sold over the four, over the 8 years of the reign of error of George Dim Leader Bush. Well, thank you. Thank you, Carol. Just got a note from Carol saying, I'm contributing $25 this evening because you said Virginia. I'll say all kinds of things to close the gap this evening. I'll promote your business. Just about. Well, I won't tap dance because I am no good at that, and I won't turn the camera on for not only naked radio but naked video. I won't do that either. That suggests a bumper, but I'm not going to play Meatloaf either, and you can't make me. But no, it was Bart Kopp who years and years and years ago nicknamed Denny Hastert at the time that he was elevated to the, or a little bit after, elevated to the Speaker of the House position in the wake of the Professor Newton Leroy Gingrich amateur paleontologist debacle, wherein we found out that he, among other things, during the whole time he was screaming at President Clinton and groping madly at his zipper, you know, in the great Clinton penis chase, you know, the cleanest, that he was banging away on Callista like a gong, okay, all the while that he was, of course, married to another woman. Hypocrisy. It doesn't matter with Republicans. So along comes Denny Hastert, who seemed kind of bland and benign and vanilla. But Bart Kopp saw through him almost immediately. It was Bart Kopp who, I believe, first began referring to Denny Hastert as Denny the Sweaty Wrestler Hastert, and making sort of, I don't know, maybe somebody was talking to Bart on the down low, but making references to the fact that there was something kind of creepy and pervy about our new Speaker of the House, who was brought in to sort of clean up the sexual and financial mess that had been made of the Republican speakership under Professor Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. And so it was that he stuck by his guns, Bart Kopp did. And Denny stopped. Denny Hastert served as Speaker of the House longer than any other Republican in the history of the Congress, which says something about how long Republicans have been allowed to have control of the House of Representatives. But he served for like 8.5, 9 years. And Bart Kopp never stopped referring to him as the Sweaty Wrestler, making reference to his days as a wrestling coach in high school out in, what was it, Yorkville, Illinois. We say it all French-like so that we can be classy. Illinois. And so yesterday, an indictment was unsealed by the federal court, based upon an investigation by the FBI of a series of payments by Denny the Sweaty Wrestler Hastert to a guy. That's almost how he's referred to in the indictment. This guy. So Denny Hastert was paying this guy. Only it turns out, apparently, that this guy who was getting the payments from Denny Hastert was a guy that Denny Hastert had sexually abused whilst he was a sweaty wrestler coach. I hope I can be forgiven for, once again, everything is a dadgum movie reference. And I'll bet most of you know what I'm thinking of already. Yeah. I'm thinking, of course, of that wonderful, zany piece of filmmaking from, dear God, was it really 35 years ago? Yes, it was. 35 years ago. This.
Cockpit before?
No, sir, I've never been up in a plane before.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Do you want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it? Joey, you ever hang around the gymnasium?
We better get back now, Joey.
No, Joey can stay here for a while if you'd like.
Could I? Okay, if you don't get in the way.
Flight 209 to Denver Radio. Climbing to cruise at 42,000. We'll report again over Lincoln. Over and out.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
You are, Kareem. I've seen you play. My dad's got season tickets.
I think you should go back to your seat now, Joey. Right, Clarence?
Oh, he's not bothering anyone. Let him stay here.
All right, but just remember, my name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't. Listen, kid. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
Joey, you like movies about gladiators?
Oh, child sexual abuse is nothing to laugh about, but my God. You could almost see Denny Hastert all those years ago. Son, would you like to go to the gymnasium with me? And, of course, he was a predator. Among other things, he was the sponsor of the Explorer Post and took high school trips with young, impressionable children to places like Canada and the Bahamas. And of course, if you were to read the New York Times article, it is just chock-a-block with reactions from people with whom he used to. Denny, I've been fielding phone calls all day, said one former colleague, asking, that's not our Denny they're talking about, is it? Hell, yes, it is. Because, see, he's a Republican. And Republicans have this sex problem. They spend all this time talking to all these right-wing, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, freakish organizations who are utterly, completely, totally, 100% of the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, 365 days a year, obsessed with how dirty, nasty, and filthy sex is. Because, frankly, if one is of the opinion that sex can be dirty, filthy, and nasty, the way that Republicans practice it is. As our buddy the Angry Indian notes, another freak. And, another, a Duggar from another mother. They can't help it. And I guess they don't really want to help it. I mean, because it really doesn't have any impact. If Denny Hastert was still in the House of Representatives, he would be sending out fundraising letters saying, "The liberals and the liberal media are out to destroy me with their scurrilous, scandalous claims about my freakalific, sexual, sweaty wrestler prowess. Please, can you send $5 to fight back against the liberal media?" And by this time tomorrow, he would have raised about $72 million. Because, among other things, Chuck and Dave, the Koch boys, sitting out there in Topeka and Kansastan or wherever the hell, we can't let a good man like Denny Hastert, I mean, he's a freak. Have you ever seen, oh my God, don't let him around the kids. But he does what we tell him to. He's just a machine that's gone a little bit bad. He just needs a repair, and we'll repair him with a few million dollars. But yeah, I'm inclined to think that I'm almost completely sold on the notion of an afterlife now. Oh, breaking news. Dennis Hastert, known to his friends as the Josh Duggar of former U.S. House Speakers, has accepted a job as head football coach at Penn State. So the guy was shaking him down. And this isn't it. And apart from all the story, parts of the news story with the New York Times about, "I can't believe it was him. He was so goddamn dull. I mean, he was dull as dishwater. And there he was, groping away on little Timmy." You like movies about gladiators? There was also, it also, and this is kind of fascinating. So he's been indicted in a federal court on criminal charges relating to the fact that he was trying to, I guess, evade notice. And while it's hard to gin up any sympathy for somebody like Denny Hastert or, any Republican, being as how they're always out there thumping away about traditional family values and Christian marriage and, yeah, right. It occurs to me that it's, this case is a little curious because the nature of the allegation is that this guy, who was once this boy, who this Hastert was disgustingly groping, well, this guy grew up, and I reckon he got to thinking about it, and when Denny Hastert became a highfalutin Speaker of the House and everything, maybe he was a little pissed off. And maybe he thought, for having had his childhood stolen from him by a sexual predator, that he deserved compensation. And so he became a blackmailer. And he said he apparently went to the sweaty wrestler and said, "Listen, you raped me and everything. I mean, you had sex with me when I was just a little boy. I think you need to pay up." And so they came to an agreement whereby Denny the Sweaty Wrestler Hastert, upholder of American values and virtues, started pulling sums of money out of the bank less than $10,000 at a time and providing them to person A, otherwise known as this guy. And this went on to the tune of something on the order of $3.5 million. And somewhere along the way, somebody dropped the dime, and the FBI showed up and said, "Hey, Denny, are you paying this guy not to talk about the fact that you fucked him when he was a little boy?" And of course, Denny Hastert lied. Arguably, the best way for this to have never become a problem would have been for Denny the Sweaty Wrestler Hastert to have never sexually abused a little boy. And, of course, the question also arises, if there's one, are there two? If there are two, are there four? If there are four, are there eight? Because sexual predators generally don't just prey on one person. I mean, Josh Duggar had five victims, four of them his sisters, one of them 4 years old. So that question is there. But the larger question, okay, lying to the FBI is a crime. How about the whole paying blackmail thing? I never knew. I never, ever knew that it was a crime to pay extortion demands from an extortioner. But apparently it is. What I find particularly interesting, however, is that had this guy, person A, simply hired a lawyer and sued Denny Hastert, they would have been completely above board. And what's more, any monies taken in judgment against Denny Hastert and recovered by this guy would have been tax-free, because they are not deemed to even be income, because they are related to personal injury. So that leads inexorably to another question. Why didn't the guy do that? His identity is still protected within the four corners of the indictment. He's still just person A, this guy. Which makes you wonder, well, on the one hand, maybe stigma still attaches to the act of sexual abuse of children, even when the children are adults. And I suppose that's one explanation for why person A chose the method he did. But, and this is purely speculative, is it possible that maybe person A, this guy, is it possible that maybe it's an upstanding Bible-believing fundamentalist, evangelical, Christ-centered family values type? Maybe it's somebody with a lot to lose politically? We won't know until there's some sort of a plea or a verdict. Texas Betsy says it's because he wouldn't have gotten any money or any relief that he didn't sue. No, if charges are true, there would have probably been a settlement, and the thing would have been sealed. The FBI never would have been involved. And no one would have been the wiser. Because the mere nasty gram from J. Noble Daggett Esquire to Denny Hastert saying, "Dear sir, please obtain counsel so that we may enter into negotiations. My client, blah, blah, says you, him, when he was years old. That's not illegal by any stretch of the imagination. That's not extortion. I was just, it led me to think that there's probably more here than meets the eye. Thank you very kindly to Dan. Dan just jumped in on fundraising this evening. We have now only $415 to go in our effort to close May to the good. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very kindly. And by the way, thank you earlier today. Our goal this evening started at 460 instead of 510 because of Byron. Thank you, Byron. So when we get into the Friday on the Front Porch portion of the program, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, I would be interested to have your thoughts on why this thing unfolded the way it did. And even if it went public, it would not have harmed Denny Hastert. Look, David Vitter is a senator from Louisiana, and he got stone cold busted for hiring hookers when he was married. And he's got upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, traditional, evangelical, fundamentalist family values and everything. And the Republicans and their followers and their faithful and their pawns and their cannon fodder in the culture wars all said, ho-hum, well, of course, he's not perfect, just forgive. Just the same way the evangelical fundamentalists are saying, ho-hum, he's not perfect, just forgiven, about Josh Duggar having committed ungodly, who only knows how many counts of incestuous molestation upon his sisters. Ho-hum, he ain't perfect, just forgiven. And, you know, well, statutes, laws, nah. I mean, even though Daddy did say that perpetrators of incest should be ritually executed, well, he didn't mean his son should be. I mean, he's not God. He's not one of those sickos that are out there willing to kill their own kid. Yeah. So we got that to talk about. Also, this little tidbit of weirdness. Wait. Before we leave the sweaty wrestler and look kindly down upon us, Bart Cop, please, and you know, cheers. Tell the goddess we will sacrifice a rubber chicken and a whoopee cushion at midnight tonight. There more and more background is coming out about the sweaty wrestler. He released a memoir in 2004 in which he wrote, "I felt a special bond with our wrestlers, and I think they felt one with me." Whew. He was a strong proponent of the Marriage Protection Act. He also wanted to amend the Constitution to state that all marriages would consist of one man and one woman. He also voted against the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, of course, was a federal law that would have prevented employers from discriminating against people from, well, on the basis of sexual orientation. He had perfect voting records, perfect scores of 100 from the National Right to Life Committee, the Christian Coalition, and the Chamber of Commerce, and the National Rifle Association. And it's worth remembering . Well, you may recall the Mark Foley scandal. The Mark Foley scandal was a scandal occasioned by the behavior of one representing Mark Foley of Floridistan, a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian, Christ-centered, evangelical fundamentalist, or something like it. And he had a thing for congressional pages. Boys. Young boys. And, it was text messages, wasn't it? And Hastert resigned as Speaker of the House when people began to notice that, he kind of knew what Mark Foley was up to and didn't report him. Now we understand why, don't we? Let's go back to the heady days of 2004. That's probably a bad term. But still, let's do. When he was speaking to the Christian Coalition. They were having their annual meeting in 2004, and he said that it was necessary to amend the Constitution to declare that marriage was between one man and one woman to, quote, send a strong message to liberal activist judges. We will not allow them to put our children's future at risk because of their agenda for political correctness. More kids need to be taught to just say no. That doesn't just apply to drugs, it also applies to sex before marriage, unless it's with me. Yeah. There we have it. Protector of American values and morals. And let's see. We have just dipped below the $400 mark. We are at $392 to go on the evening's fundraising. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you very much. No, we've got it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, and there's a reason for me bringing this story up. Over in merry old England, Northern England, a preacher, the pastor of a flock, brought in an evangelist. If you enjoyed Pastor Pillow Wednesday night, our friend Eric Bjorn from ForwardProgressives.com, you can identify a little bit because that, you know, what he and I did was satire. But this, the reason it's satire is because there's a very real reality out there of this kind of sick conduct. So this charlatan, this god hustler, by the name of Robbie Dawkins, who claims faith healing powers. Was evangelizing at this church in Northern England when a guy collapsed. And Robbie Dawkins is now going around saying that he raised him from the dead. Oh, really? And the guy who collapsed, sister, said, no, he was never dead. We had a pulse at all times. He was having a seizure. But Robbie Dawkins is saying, no, he did. What I saw was a strong demonic presence over him. I began to bind the spirit of death and say, you can't have him. I began to declare the resurrection life of Jesus Christ over him. People were beginning to get a bit restless, but then I could hear his breathing start to recover and his color started to return. The man who had a seizure, sister, has opened a Facebook page to try to take a little bit of the piss out of Dawkins. And he said, and she says on the Facebook page, what Robbie is telling everyone is not true. It has since been medically proven that Matthew had suffered an epileptic seizure, which often can display similar signs of someone dying. Two nurse family friends of ours both had their hands on Matthew throughout and not once lost his pulse. So no, Matthew did not die. Mm-hmm. The doctor who was also there is said to be apologizing to them next week for all the pain caused through this unbelievable encounter that he had given and the shock that all this had been broadcast on Facebook by this coward of a man who will not face up to the actual truth. That's a good question, Carol. Why don't these assholes ever protect kids instead of raising other assholes from the dead? There you go. But so it's all so much hogwash, but one little paragraph in the middle of the story stuck out to me. And it is this, over at Raw Story. Dawkins, who has previously complained that United Airlines would not allow him to resurrect another passenger who died on a flight, said Catlow's condition has improved dramatically. Now, of course, the hustler, Robbie Dawkins, says that he collapsed when he heard the sermon's title, Matt Catlow did, and that his hands withered and began twitching as his mother screamed for an ambulance, and that's what made Robbie Dawkins know that there was a demon involved, because he heard the name of the sermon, and then, yeah, there he went, you know, because demons do that. But it was the paragraph about United Airlines not allowing him to raise a passenger from the dead during a flight that caught my eye. Can you imagine that? I mean, first of all, I generally have a tremendous amount of respect for people who serve as flight attendants, men and women alike, because they put up with ungodly amounts of crap. You know, most times the people on the flight are well behaved and everything, but you know, for the days that they're not, you know, they're just a little bit bad, they get real bad. So you can just imagine this gospel sharp sitting there saying, "No, no, I need to go and raise him from the dead. Sir, he's dead. I can raise it." No, you can't. And what a pain in the ass that must have been. But it reminded me of something else. To wit, I can see the flight attendant saying, "No, sir, you can't go and raise him from the dead," because of a very real story that happened. I read the story earlier this month. and it's a horror. This isn't Hockey Puck. This is just try not to scream. Karen Momsen Evers, back in April, was flying from New Orleans to Milwaukee. And if you try to engage in a sufficient amount of empathy to really get the full horror of this, it will shake you. She had boarded the plane, and the plane was pulling away from the, or about to pull away from the gate. It was a Southwest Airlines flight, again, from New Orleans to Milwaukee. And just as they were getting ready to leave, her phone dinged, and she got a text message from her husband. The text message from her husband said that he was about to commit suicide. Can you even begin to fathom the sickening grip of fear and misery and anguish that would attend such a moment? Well, the folks at Southwest Airlines couldn't. She immediately texted back to her husband a simple response, "No!" But then she started trying to call him, and the flight attendant came clip-clopping down the aisle of the plane and said, "Ma'am, you're going to have to turn off your phone. Federal Aviation Administration regulations require that you turn off your phone." So she turned off the phone. And then once they got up to cruising altitude, she called for a second flight attendant and begged her. She said, "Please, please, I've got to get an emergency phone call through. My husband just told me he's committing suicide." And she showed the flight attendant the texts. And she said, well, okay, go tell the pilot. They can make a call. They're on the radio up there. Please! Please!" And the flight attendant said, "No, ma'am, I'm sorry. The pilot is busy flying the plane, and we cannot disturb him." Poor Karen Momsen Evers just said, I just wanted someone to go and try to save him. And so she spent the remainder of the flight sitting there in her seat, weeping. And only after they got on the ground in Milwaukee was she able to reach the police. She was frantic. And when she finally got home, the police were waiting for her and told her that her husband was dead at his own hand. So I can at least believe the part where Robbie Dawkins says that a flight attendant stopped him from trying to resurrect a dead guy on an airplane. The PR department at Southwest Airlines swung into sweat condition alpha overdrive, and a spokes creep there said, "Our flight attendants are responsible for executing safety procedures to prepare a flight for departure and arrival in accordance with FAA regulations while assisting the up to 100-plus passengers on board. Southwest Airlines transports more than 100 million customers a year, and it's not uncommon for our crews to assist passengers with life events. In each situation, our employees utilize their training to handle a wide variety of situations to the best of their ability. We were extremely saddened to learn of Mrs. Evers' loss, and the Southwest family extends our deepest condolences again.
Our hearts go out to the Evers family during this difficult time. Bags fly free on Southwest. So do coffins. No, they didn't say that part. We feel so bad. Bullshit. That's not serving customers when you tell them to sit quietly, knowing that even as they sit there, their husband, their partner in life, is exiting life. That's just brutal. So, we got that going for us. Okay, we covered Denny Hastert. We got so much stuff out there. What else? Where shall we go? What shall we do to follow that? How about a little white-splaining? That's always fun. Over at the American Family Association radio of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan, in addition to Brian Fisher, they also have Sandy Rios. You know that one of the dominant bits of swill promulgated by the right wing in this country is that Barack Obama is the one who's the racist, and it's his fault that all the white people are losing their minds in this country. So for some reason or another, a man of color called Sandy Rios' program. For this, you want the hockey puck. Really.
Sheriff Michael Lewis, and that was a clip from Sean Hannity's show last night on Fox. I agree with him. I think race relations, not that they were, you know, it was a utopia, but I think when the president came into office, I still remember, as I've said on this mic before, we'll repeat, when Attorney General Eric Holder made the statement that we are, his first statement, right out of the box, he's just been nominated, he's just been confirmed by the Senate, he says, we are a nation of racial cowards. And I remember thinking at the time, what? Why would he talk about that? Among all the things that are happening in the world right then, it was the financial crisis, it was all the other things.
Could a person be more cluelessly white than Sandy Rios? I'm not sure. Let's let her keep digging.
Race relations, I mean, not that that's not important, it is, but it wasn't, I believe that we were moving on a trajectory, more black middle class, more black Americans getting to college, taking their place in society, moving forward, maybe not the end game, but moving forward, and I agree with the sheriff that this president and this attorney general have pushed things so far back. I hate that. I hate what it's done to race relations. I hate that. It's divisive, and that's what the president's all about, is dividing people by race, color, sex. It's just amazing to me.
Isn't she just special? So that's the setup. That's what she says. And then, oh joy, Charles from Columbus calls in to take her to task. I haven't delivered this little piece of advice in a while, so maybe it's time I did it again. Some people on our side occasionally get it into their get the notion that it would be good to, by God, call that fill in the blank, Limbaugh, Hannity, what have you, Sandy Rios, Brian Fisher, and straighten them out. Don't. They're sitting in a studio. They have all the knobs and all the buttons. They have the delay, and you can't win. It's like trying to win on a carnival midway. The game is rigged. But sometimes you get these little gems, like what happens when Charles from Columbus calls in and Sandy Rios has to, well, you know, straighten him up. Because, well, you know how it is. No, I'm not going to be a smartass about it. This is an example of the persistent and ongoing infantilization of African Americans by extremely privileged white people who think that they just don't get it.
I'm going to allow the Lord to lead me in what I'm about to say. Unfortunately, sisters and brothers like yourselves and others just don't get it as it pertains basically to Black America and the history of Black America with regards to America. I get so discouraged when I hear you guys talk about the current situation with policing and Black America. I'm going to give you two quick examples of what I'm talking about. I'm in Columbus. Up in Cleveland, I don't know if you're aware of it. Three years ago, there were 13 white officers who chased down a Black couple. The couple ran out of gas. They thought they were being shot at because the car was backfiring. They surrounded the car with the couple inside. They shot off down 137 rounds, 40 of which went into those couples. Then you had one officer get on top of the car. He empties his clip right through the front dash window. He went to court. His case, his case came to court. They charged him with manslaughter, I think. They charged, there were four cops they charged with lesser degrees. They had lesser charges, okay? Which to me is a problem right there.
Charles?
The judge last Saturday, let me finish, because I want to get these out. This is an example. The judge last Saturday found nothing wrong with what the guy had done, and they released him. Now, that in and of itself is a crime. The fact that he would see nothing wrong with...
Charles? Okay, before Sandy Rios starts white-splaining, let me at least note that everything Charles in Columbus there just said to that clueless white lady is absolutely true. The conduct on the part of the judge in a bench trial, no jury, on a manslaughter charge that arguably should have been murder, was it will live up there in miscarriages of justice. This is Dred Scott stuff in terms of just plain bad behavior from the bench. The judge's rationale for sending the guy who dumped his clip through the windshield into these two innocent people is that he couldn't be sure that the bullets that that guy fired were the ones that did them in, and that it wouldn't be fair to punish him when maybe somebody else actually killed them when this guy was standing under the hood of the car, you know, shooting them point blank. It was sickening. And taken in conjunction with Tamir Rice, it shows that, well, I mean, I'm going to Cleveland next week if we can keep the fundraising going. And the only thing that's going to protect me, if anything's going to protect me, is going to be my white privilege. And I know it. But now we have to let Sandy Rios do some white-splaining.
Charles, Charles, let me interrupt you because I do know that case, and I wanted you to tell the case, but then let me respond. Here's the thing.
How do you respond except to say that that is odious conduct, it is outrageous conduct, it is conduct that calls for massive degrees of compensation and probably massive amounts of jail time, but you're probably not going to hear that from good, God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, Bible-believing, evangelical, gun-dementalist Sandy Rios of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, stand. But she's familiar with the case. Charles from Columbus, who, as the, to use the idiom, has skin in the game, being a black male in America, he needs it explained to her by old ma'am from the big house.
If the facts, as you just explain them, are true, then that's very troubling. But let me just caution you.
See, it's troubling, but he needs to be cautioned because, you know, they're like children.
It's the same thing with our alarm over, you know, Jade Helm or...
No, it's not, you twit! Really? Really? She just compared the cold-blooded massacre, because I think when there are 137 bullets involved and two unarmed people, I think you can call that a massacre. She just compared a massacre to the frothy, paranoid ravings of the white wing in America. Really? It's just like Jade Helm. Thorazine dart. Carol, where did you put the U-shaped blowgun, damn it? All right. Let's give her a chance. Not much of one, but let's give her a chance.
That's very troubling, but let me just caution you. It's the same thing with our alarm over, you know, Jade Helm or over, you know, the administration behaving lawlessly.
Mother. No, it's not the same thing, lady. No, it's not. White people are not being gunned down in the street and left to lie in the August heat for hours on end. Little white 12-year-olds are not being blown away within 2 seconds of a police car arriving. They aren't being shot in the back over a taillight out. They aren't being choked to death. They aren't being kicked within an inch of their lives outside Detroit. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We have to have to make sure that the information we're getting is accurate. My understanding of that case is that there's more to that story.
Oh, right. Sure. What more? That the backfiring of the automobile was actually masking the Obama blue-helmeted UN troops who were putting their sights on the heroic police officers? What? Like, what more can there be to that case? Were they guilty of strong-armed robbery? Had they been selling Lucy's? We're going to finish this.
So, but let's assume that in Columbus, Ohio, these police cold-bloodedly murdered...
It was Cleveland, you twit. Were you not even listening? No, you weren't. Because, you know, he's that color, and therefore, you're the one with all the facts.
These two people in this car, which is, I think, the narrative that... You do understand, Charles, that there are people who want to whip the black community into a frenzy by misrepresenting facts. You know, I just was the object of this. I have just been... People have been whipped into a frenzy over statements I made about the train conductor.
Oh, my God. The poor baby. It's just like cops jumped... It's just like the liberals jumped on her car and started unloading the clips of the guns that they don't carry through her windshield and shooting her into a million tiny pieces, putting 40 bullets in her body because she said... The engineer on the Amtrak train probably crashed the train because he was a confused homosexual taking female hormones. too early for tequila.
And what they're saying, they take a lot of what I said and then twist it, and then it goes like a house of fire. So
I played the clip. What was it, a week and a half ago? I played the clip. Nobody twisted what she said. She said, I don't know, you know, these homosexuals, I mean, I had a friend who was confused about his gender, and he was taking hormones, and they made him stop being an airplane pilot. But can you imagine the universe-size bubble of privilege around this woman that she would, A, assume that someone out there is inflaming your passions? These are facts that were adduced at trial, lady. Didn't Jesus or his daddy say something about bearing false witness, Sandy? Holy shit. Onward.
I know how this works. Maybe you don't, but I...
I know how this works. Maybe you don't. Yeah, she really did. She really did say that. Because she knows all about racism, but Charles from Columbus, who is speaking to her, obviously, as a Christian, referred to her as a sister in Christ. But she knows more about racism than a man who lives with it every day of his life.
I'm telling you, there are people that benefit from twisting the story ever so slightly to get you whipped into a rage because...
Because, you know, black men are so easily whipped into a rage. Really? You use the verb whipped? Whipped, Sandy? Woo! You know, there's a reason the American Family Association is headquartered in Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan! Whipped!
I think you're a black man. Did you say that you were black?
Yeah, I'm black.
Okay.
Let me say, this is on video. This is called on video. Okay.
I know, but you don't know. But, Charles, okay, I don't want to argue this particular case. Because let's don't do that. But let's look at the broader question. Because I don't know enough about it. I just can tell you I have been told there. I heard reports that there was more to the story that's not. Look, ABC doesn't care about giving you the whole story. Neither does CBS, because they want you to be an angry black man. Do you understand that?
Do you understand that, angry black man? Do you understand? Speechless. I'm rendered speechless. And they give this woman with her perfect makeup and her hair and her nails and her perfect life. You know, they give her a check every couple of weeks for that, and she gets called a professional broadcaster. You know, as long as that's a professional broadcaster, I'll be happy not to be one. Well, what do you say we fire up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group and see what kind of conversational hijinks we can get into this evening, shall we? Because otherwise, well, otherwise I'm going to have to get the Thorazine dart out. But bear in mind, just one last thing.
Just one last thing, ma'am.
it's not just the black people that the right wing knows are just not the right sort of people. It's anybody who isn't, you know, white. Darker than the hue of a brown paper bag. And, well, the Republicans, they need to talk to you. Enter Phyllis Schlafly, who wants to talk about the immigrant experience. You didn't put away the hockey puck just because we were done with Sandy Rios, did you? No.
One of the biggest political issues in America today is Obama's plan to give illegal amnesty to 5 million South Americans. Obama is already admitting tens of thousands of aliens from South America and trying to justify this by repeating the line that we are a nation of immigrants. The problem is that the immigrants coming into our country today are not the same sort as the immigrants who contributed so much to building our great country.
In other words, they're not white. They're not the same sort of immigrants.
The immigrants who came to America in the 1920s and 30s were different, with very different motives. Today, May 11th, is the birthday of one of our most famous immigrants. Born the son of a rabbi, he emigrated with his family from Russia to New York. Falling in love with America, he served as a sergeant during World War I. After taking
it. Oh, I thought it was going to. I thought it was going to be, what's her name, who later became Ayn Rand. Well, we got to listen to the whole thing because I got to know the rest of the story.
Up a career in music, he wrote some of the most all-time popular songs, such as White Christmas and
Irving Berlin. And the first thing she can think of in talking about how we don't get the right kind of immigrants anymore is White Christmas. Ooh, ooh, I'm going to be running naked in the yard any minute now, yanking it. Oh, God.
Especially God Bless America. He gave the royalties from those two songs to the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts. His name was Irving Berlin. In 1945, President Harry Truman awarded him the Army's Medal of Merit. In 1955, he received the Congressional Gold Medal from President Eisenhower. And in 1977, he received the Freedom Medal from President Ford. Irving Berlin's devotion to America was so eloquently expressed in the song that all Americans frequently sing today, God Bless America, Land That I Love, Stand Beside Her and Guide Her Through the Night with the Light from Above.
Get down, Phyllis Schlafly!
From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam, God bless America, my home sweet home. It's quite true that America was built by hardworking people from all over the world who sought a place of freedom where they could realize their dream.
But
today's immigrants don't have the same motivation, the same love for America, the same desire to be part of the American culture and dream.
Phyllis Schlafly. And she looks so lifelike. Isn't she also down at Disney World? Doesn't she say, "Welcome to the Hall of Presidents"? And it's only what it is because, see, her racism, her xenophobia, is so baked into her coding that she says this stuff absolutely cluelessly, knowing that there's a whole bunch of cranky old people out there in America. Hey, exactly. You tell them. Hey, that Phyllis, I tell you what, she cranks my handle. My God, she makes my withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave. That Phyllis Schlafly. Hey, you. Well, she's an American and. And God dang it, these God-danged Mexicans is coming here with their Mexican talk, and it's not America anymore. Where's my milk of magnesia cocktail, Marvelline? God dang it, I'm America. I love it. Phyllis, call me Phyllis.
We'll do lunch. Okay. I remember when we first came to this country and had to walk 6 miles uphill through 15 feet of snow just to get to school, uphill both ways, and didn't even have nothing but mustard sandwiches. We didn't have nothing but beans, and we didn't have none of those brown people, because it was a great country then. Greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever. Amen.
I think with that, we can take a break. Thank you very kindly to Roger for jumping into the fundraising efforts this evening. Roger just took the fundraising goal for the evening down to only $292. We've got about an hour and 45 minutes left in the program. Hopefully, we can get that $292 taken care of. It's a great evening to stand shoulder to shoulder with some of your other Horn family members, Dan, Carol, Roger, Betsy. Thank you one and all. And if we don't take a break, I'm going to scream. This is Conversation Radio. Friday on the Front Porch, about to get started. Jump in. If you've never done it before, just send on Skype a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and you will be part of the conversation. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sandy, the fireworks are hailing over Little Eden tonight, forcing a light into all those stony faces left stranded on this warm July. Down in time, the circuits fall a switch, blade lovers so fast, so shiny, so sharp. As the wizards play down on Pinball Way, on the boardwalk way past dark. And the boys from the casino dance with their shirts open like Latin lovers on the shore, chasing all them silly New York virgins by the score. Sleeping on the beach all night. Them boys in their high heels. Ah, Sandy, their skins are so white. And me, I just got tired of hanging in them dusty arcades, banging them pleasure machines, chasing the factory girls underneath the boardwalk, where they all promise to unsnapper jeans. And you know that tilt-a-whirl down on the South Beach drag, I got on it last night and my shirt got caught, and it kept me spinning. Didn't think I'd ever get off. Thank you.
That waitress I was seeing lost her desire for me. I spoke with her last night. She said she won't set herself on fire for me anymore. She worked that joint under the boardwalk. She was always a girl you saw bopping down the beach with the radio. The kids say last night she was dressed like a star in one of them cheap little seaside bars. And I saw her parked with Lover Boy out on the Kokomo. She hear the cops finally busted Madame Marie for telling fortunes better than they knew. For me, this boardwalk life's through, babe. You ought to quit this scene, too.
The bumper was really a toss-up. Earlier, I had queued up Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze for its signature line, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy," in honor of the sweaty wrestler Denny Hastert. But then Sandy Rios and her white-splaining really did get all over me, and Sandy the firework, Bruce Springsteen. 4th of July, Asbury Park, Sandy, and it won out in the DJ sweepstakes this evening. 23 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch on the horn. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid. You know that. We are getting ready to get started on the Friday on the front porch conversation. The we've got some folks gathered together in the Horn Molloy Skype chat room. You can jump in, join in if you wish. And right now, the stress line, 304-663-4676 is open if you want to participate that way on Friday on the front porch. Let's run over and say good evening to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Molloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm among the living.
Are you got a sauna going today?
Say what?
The sauna, is it going today?
No. The sauna is actually, it's only 75 degrees in here, so it's downright tolerable.
Oh, that's cool. Well, it started getting hot here yesterday, got up to 90, and then the house started getting hot, so I thought I'd click on the air conditioner. Well, it don't work.
Oh, no.
I think it's a victim of the flood.
Oh, well, you know, given the vector of things like Legionnaire's disease, if it was flood affected, it might be a good idea to bid it upon farewell.
Yeah, I can't get a serviceman until sometime next week.
Oh, brother.
But anyway, it's only 91. I thought it was going to be 95 today. And in a pinch, I break out my MacGyver cooler. I got a little fan that I mount on the wall, and I take a gallon milk jug, frozen, put it in a little dish, and I blow air down on that milk jug, and then I run my ceiling fan in the room, and it keeps the room nice and cool.
It's sort of a lower tech version of the swamp cooler.
Yeah, only with ice.
Right.
And it melts slowly, and then you have to replace it with another frozen jug.
That's really kind of efficient, though, isn't it? I mean, is it doing the job?
Oh, yeah. It lowered the temperature this end of the house. It was going up 79 and brought it down at a degree.
And So fairly soon, the man cave will be off limits to you during program hours, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I've been experimenting with hanging ice on that too, but then I thought, well, my big upright freezer is out by the man cave, and I unplugged it before the flood hit and lost everything, and it cleaned it out. I let it sit. Well, I plugged it in yesterday. It don't work either.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
So I was going to start loading it up with gallon jugs of freezing ice blocks so I could hang on the fans in the man cave.
But no.
No. So I'm going to have to buy a new freezer eventually.
You have my sympathy. I know a little bit about losing appliances due to natural disaster.
The main thing to get fixed first off is the air conditioner.
Yeah, well, because as India is teaching us now, those temperatures can be dangerous.
Well, I've been there with these temperatures here in the valley. I mean, as a little kid, I mean, I can remember getting up to 110 and stuff and going out. You know, Mom would give us an egg and we'd go out and fry it on the sidewalk.
Jeez.
Just to say we did it.
Well, we've got a good little group gathered in the Horn Malloy Skype chat.
We've got a new person here tonight.
Yes, we do, and I want to welcome Susie to the conversation. Hi, Suze.
She might not know what to do.
Well, you just chime in when the spirit moves you, Susie. Good evening, Carol in Australia.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
It's the weekend, and next week's going to be a real booger, but I'm just kind of trying to take it easy and not let the stress get me.
Yeah, you're going to have a fun week.
Oh, Tuesday's going to be I'm looking forward to getting up to Cleveland, but, man, get up, get out of here at 6 o'clock, hopefully get over and look at the facilities at the Euclid Tavern, find out what it's going to take to get the broadcast out, do that, and turn around and drive like a bat out of hell, you know, back here in time to be on the air Wednesday. Woo!
It sounds very much like Grateful Dead tour.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I take it you toured back in the day?
I toured many, many times. I went back and forth across the country 4 or 5 times. It was wonderful. The Grateful Dead helped a whole generation of people get to see their country. And we went into Podunk everywhere and dropped a whole bunch of money on them. And most places that we went, they really loved us.
I remember, I don't have an extensive history of Dead shows, but I saw a few dandies. One of the best was, what was it, maybe 1989 in Pittsburgh at the Civic Arena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just a carnival atmosphere. Of course, it always was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that was a really good time, too, from about 1987 to 93. Jerry was in fabulous shape and very energetic, very happy, very driving the music. So there was a lot of love being expressed.
Yeah, that show opened with Bertha.
Oh, good. That's always a good place to start.
Yeah.
And they're going to be doing it again this July for the last time in San Jose and then in Chicago.
Is
50th
it,
anniversary?
That is mind-boggling, the 50th anniversary of the Dead.
And it's been 20 years since Jerry died. That's what's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah, and I remember, I hate myself for remembering things this way, Carol, but I remember what a sleazy pig Limbaugh was when Jerry died.
Oh, God. I'm sure. I didn't hear any of it, but I heard about it. And that's actually a mark of honor for the Deadheads, to be slagged by somebody that lacks so much soul. That's actually an honorific.
Well, and of course, at the same time that he was sleazing him, Limbaugh, of course, was in the depths of his own addiction.
Oh,
you know,
my.
Kind of like Denny Hastert talking about protecting families at the same time that he himself had sexually abused a little boy.
I know that's always the way the hypocrisy comes out. It's often on the same kind of sin that we're talking about, and it's more outrageous from the people who are doing all the screaming about it. It's this projection of their inner contents onto everybody else, which if you're working your way through Ponderology, you can see these patterns keep recurring, that whenever somebody, particularly on that side who doesn't think very logically, condemns other people for a particular behavior, you're almost guaranteed that that's the behavior that they're practicing.
Exactly. I mean, that I was long before I got the book, Republicans tend to criticize in others the things they most easily recognize within themselves. Yeah, it was when Jerry Garcia passed away, Limbaugh referred to him as a dirtbag, just another dead doper.
Boy, isn't that projection.
mute the mic and hand me another handful of those Oxycontins. I chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
And put one of those cute little boys on my knee.
Where's my Viagra?
Let's not go there. It's too early in the day for me to think about
that.
Well,
yeah, I mean, you're doing it. It's too early in the evening. You know, there's never a good time, Carol.
I know. Sunday afternoon after church is a good time to talk about it.
Well, true. Pastor Whackbottom standing there at the door to the cathedral. Hey, good evening, Rick, down in Southern California. How in the world are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Bob. Having a great show so far.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to decompress, de-stress a little bit. Phyllis Schlafly didn't do me any good. I got a note from our buddy Ron in Raleigh. That just kind of made me kick furniture. He said, remember, you know who called this screeching old harridan a national treasure? Phyllis Schlafly. A national treasure. Sweet Jeebus. I can hardly hold my fudge. Ooh, I do believe I've forgotten my fudge. I said, no, really? And no, Bob, I'm not kidding you. I almost lost it when he said it. She and he believe in the incorrectness of Marbury versus Madison. Whenever Ron writes to me about something like this, he uses the phrase "you know who" to describe Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman referred to that nasty old gas bag Phyllis Schlafly as a national treasure, and he wasn't joking. He didn't have his tongue in his cheek or anything.
Hartman did.
Yeah,
that's surprising. A treasure to whom?
I get a nation.
What nation?
Well, there you go. What nation?
Texasistan, maybe? I don't know.
A treasure to the Reich.
There you go. I can't say that I'm at all surprised about this stuff with Denny Hastert. I mean, I suspected just what I'd heard about Hastert.
Did we lose you, Rick?
Sure, you know, I mean, he,
Okay, where's my audio going?
And so forth, and I'll...
Rick, I don't know what's going on, but you're kind of coming in and out.
Caught? You're not hearing me?
Well, I am now. I'd kind of like for you to go back and explain why it was that Denny Hastert gave you the creeps.
Oh, okay. Yeah, here, let me... Well, I think he lived at wherever the... Or maybe it was K Street, wherever the all the Republicans hung out at.
The C Street, the family?
Yeah, he's got a problem.
Okay, so it's not our Skype group connection, right?
No. Susie, can you talk now?
Oh, that's weird.
Okay.
Oh, you're dropping out on your.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good now.
Good now.
Oh, okay. Are we on air still?
Oh, yes.
Yep.
We never.
Oh,
left.
I don't know if you heard anything about what I said.
No, we're going to try a third time. Maybe it'll be a okay. charm.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's the curse of Denny. Maybe. Who knows? But I mean, I knew that. You know, I knew just something was awry with that guy. I don't know, just kind of a spidey sense, so to speak. You hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, good, good. I don't want to sound like a Verizon commercial, but my understanding is that wasn't he part of that that group, that real religious fundy group that sponsors the prayer breakfast and so forth, and these guys all live like in the same house, they're all like single men. And I just sort of thought that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that would be C Street and the Family, wouldn't it?
C Street and the Family. Was he I think he may have lived there. I don't know for sure. But that was the sense I had. I mean, he always seemed like a really weird bird to me. And, you know, what kind of a guy is a wrestling coach anyway who's not married? You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm stereotyping, overgeneralizing. I don't know.
Well, it's just that's why I played that clip from Airplane. There's something.
And that was spot on.
Well, apparently it made the bells and sirens go off for Bart Cop, because he was the first one I'm aware of who pointed out the inherent, because you know the for-profit media are saying, well, you know, he was such a quiet and circumspect fellow, no one would ever have surprised. I mean, it's almost like what the kind of coverage you get when a white guy goes on a shooting rampage. Well, you know, he was kind of quiet. He was a little bit of a loner, said Eustace T. Braindead, his longtime next-door neighbor. He seemed like a nice enough fellow. I mean, I'm totally surprised that he just shot 97 people in a movie theater.
Exactly. I mean, the guy was just, I don't know, I just kind of, my creep meter kind of went off with that guy. He just seemed like, you know, like weird Uncle Earl, who's like Earl the Perv, you know? I don't know. I'm, you know.
You mean Chester, Chester the Molester?
Oh, Chester the Molester. There you go. That's right. Oh, gosh. I think Susie might be able to get on now. I'm not sure. Let me mute me and somebody else can talk here for a little bit, okay?
Okay.
No, she's still having problems.
Oh, bummer. Okay.
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 But Larry's here.
Yeah, Larry. Yeah, hey, Larry.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
We're well. You?
Well, I'm here. I'm here. I'm keeping on, keeping on. School is over for the next 3 weeks, and I'm just in one of my moods. I don't, you know, I'm just in one of my funky moods. You know, one of my low moods right now. But
We'll drag you up out of it, Larry.
I'll fight through it. By the way, I have a couple things to say, Bob, and to everybody. I got a response from the district director of the Pacific Central section of the Unitarian Universalists, and he also CC'd you, Bob, saying where he was going to be at the General Assembly in Portland.
Right, and I saw that email come through, Larry, and I really appreciate your your work out there. On the front end of all of this, and hopefully things will settle down a little bit, and I can kind of take an afternoon and try to you know, logistically figure out what this is going to look like. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to let the effort down. You know, I wasn't going to let you down and let the effort down to.
Oh no, and you didn't.
Try to push this through. The other thing that I wanted to mention, and I'm told that it's not the responsibility of the webmaster or the host, but my Java on my computer is not allowing me to run a Java applet to be able to run the chat room either on your show or on Mike Malloy's show, and I'm trying to deal with Apple, and what they're telling me, I have to work with Oracle, so I just have to get some paid support or something, and hope Oracle can help me find a Java applet so that I can. And this is not on the iPad. I have no problem on the iPad.
No, this is on your iMac.
This is on my iMac. Yeah.
Yeah. And Grant, you are so not alone, Larry, because a lot of regulars in the Horn chat room have found themselves bedeviled by Java, the way Java is operating within the OS X environment.
Yeah, so, but Greg was telling me that it's not your, it shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, your concern, nor Mike's concern, nor anybody, you know, over there. It's something to do with my computer. So I don't know what to do with that, but I know Greg's trying to help. You know, I know that. So, well, that's all I can say. I'm just trying. I'd like to just be able to get on chat and be able to hear the show, and be able to hear the show live, you know, on the website, and then also be able to be a part of the chat when I'm up at the iMac, and I can't do both using the iPad. The iPad is just different. So, okay, other than that, I'm out of school. I'm trying to find ways to keep myself busy. Mercedes is here, trying to help me keep me healthy and, you know, keeping me, pulled together and, you know, so that's what's happening right now. Okay.
Good deal. Good deal. Hey, let me go back to Carol for a minute. Carol, you wanted to issue a challenge for the evening?
Yes, sir. I want to put $50 on the table and get some people to match it.
That would be wonderful. So Carol will match the next 50 bucks that come in, assuming 50 bucks come in, and that will take us down to only $192 to go. So we sit at $292 to finish off May. And hopefully in the next hour and 17 minutes or so, we'll get that out of the way. I know that's a big chunk of change, and I apologize for the fundraising, but it's the only way we stay on the air, right?
We dig it. We're just so grateful to have you here, Bob. We dig it.
And, well, I appreciate it. We all do. Because this is, you know, this is how we make it. And I know I say this a lot, but there are a lot of people who listen to this program and don't contribute because they can't. But they are vital members of this community, and I want and the whole idea behind all of this is for everybody to have access. You know, we were talking about Carol. We were talking about, you know, dead shows and stuff a little bit ago. You remember the people who were always walking around the parking lot with a sign that "Need a miracle."
Everybody walking around with their finger up. Yep, I was one of them once in a while, but I got given free tickets, and whenever I had an extra, I gave them away for free.
Which is kind of how this operation works, isn't it?
That's how humanity actually works, if it's done right.
Well, it's true, true, very true. So I'm keeping fingers crossed, because, well, like I said, next week's going to be kind of brutal, too, because program Monday on the road and then Bill's Memorial Tuesday, and all of this is kind of part of, being able to get to Bill's Memorial. And then back for a program on Wednesday, and then no programs on Thursday and Friday, so that's going to mean a $400 hole right there. Let me share a message that just came in via the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan to Larry from Diane. You listening, Larry? She says, if you don't mind being the messenger, I have a message for Larry. Think back to the Friday on the front porch right before Mr. Stress left us. In a moment of pure grace, Larry paused in the conversation to tell Bill how much his stories and understandings of the past were appreciated and how they enriched the program. Larry said it better than that, but I remember at the time thinking how appropriate Larry's message to Bill was and how he was speaking on behalf of the whole Horn family. This was the first thing I thought of when I tuned in on Monday and heard the sad news. Thank you, Larry, for ensuring that Mr. Stress heard this appreciation before he left us. Most sincerely, Diane in Kansasstan. What happens here? What happens here matters.
Well, thank you very much, and I wasn't the only one. You know, Rick also expressed appreciation, which is very nice that he did that as well. And well, thank you very much. And I appreciate that. I was in the middle of a conversation with Mercedes when you called my attention, so my attention was split. But it's okay. I heard it. And is this Diane from Kansas State?
Kansas Stan, yes.
Oh, Kansas State University of Manhattan.
The marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas Stan.
Yes. Well, thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Stretch the screen.
And I know Rick had said something as well at the time. And I've pondered that a lot in the last week or so, how that just happened that way. And it was. Diane said it best. It was a couple of moments of pure grace. And it was lovely.
It's almost a little bit cosmic, Bob. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen in life, and it just so happened that, you know, I just got the idea to say, Bill, no, you know, we do want to hear what you have to say. You know, we appreciate what you have to say, and, you know, no, you don't have to be self-deprecating and, you know, say, no, let somebody else talk. No, Bill, we want to hear you talk, you know. So that's just sort of the way it worked out, I guess, that, you know. Maybe we all are connected in the universe. I tend to think we are in some fashion. I don't know exactly how.
Well, that, and
universal spirit. Who knows?
Exactly, and that's why I said that I'm absolutely convinced this evening that Bart Kopp is drinking tequila through a straw with the goddess of irony tonight. There's no other explanation. It exceeds and surpasses all rational all rational explanations. So. You just kind of got to get with Hamlet from Act 1, Scene 5 and say, more things in heaven and earth, right?
Just go with the flow. Just take it wherever it leads you, I guess, right, Bob?
Right. Hey, Carol, good news.
Yes, sir.
Mo Liberal from the chat room just met your challenge.
Cool.
So that means we've got $192 to go if anybody would like to double up. Or you know, match what Mo Liberal did, and then we'll from there, and the dominoes fall, and we're closing May on the okay.
In that case, I issue a further challenge to another 50.
Oh, goodness me. Okay. So another $50 challenge is on the table for anyone else who wants to. Thank you very kindly, Carol. That's really huge. And hopefully someone will respond. By the way, I guess, I don't know what it is with Java, but a lot of people are having trouble. I just got a note from Betsy saying the chat room keeps crashing on two different kinds of browsers on my MacBook. So it's apparently something about Apple and OS X and Java. It's a mess.
Well, Apple says that it's Java. And I don't know what the Oracle people say.
Oh, they'll say it's Apple. You don't even have to
ask. And they'll say it's Apple.
Right.
And then in the meantime, what Greg was saying, and I hope he's listening, he was saying to me, why did you upgrade in the first place?
Yes.
Why didn't you just stay with an older version of the program? You should never have updated.
Bingo.
So no matter.
That's what I do now. I've had problems where you got to go in and readjust the security settings every time you update, and I just said, screw it. So both my Windows 7 machines, I don't update it anymore.
And so the best thing I was explained to me is, do not let Java self update.
No,
Rocco.
Oh, well, Java updates are security updates, and they're constantly finding holes in the software. So you're better off just upgrading it and maybe not using Safari, and just reading through pretty well through the stuff. I haven't had any problems yet with Safari other than acknowledging the security things. Settings, and it's not a great big deal, at least not for me. I'm sorry, I'm just a computer nerd. I've been doing this stuff for 30 years, so.
You're right, but it's handy to have a computer nerd when us non-nerds get in over our heads, Rocco.
I guess.
Well.
And welcome. And by the way, welcome to the conversation this evening. It's nice to have you in the extraordinary ordinary roundtable.
Thanks. You're bringing out my inner radical these days with some of your stuff, like yesterday with the angry Indian.
Oh yes, he had a show yesterday again.
Oh my God, it reminds me of my time when I was a kid that I lived in Brooklyn on the intersection of, like, Canarsie, East New York, and Brownsville.
Hang on. Mute, Betsy.
Uh-oh.
How do you know it's Betsy?
Because I just added her.
Oh. So it reminded me of old times in the 60s back then and there. It was just when I was a radical, when I was a little kid, I guess.
Yeah, he's done about three shows in a week. By the way, the first show, Bob, first show that he did, of the last three, he broadcast the very long discussion that you had right after Mr. Stress passed away. You had him on for about an hour and a half, and he broadcast the whole conversation.
Yep.
That was interesting.
But he always runs that jive music behind it. It's really sometimes hard to hear him.
Okay, angry? Are you listening? You're getting input and feedback from your listenership.
I love your stuff, angry. But sometimes it's hard to pick you out from the. I don't know, what is it, like, disco thing that's going on behind him sometimes.
Yeah, Angry's had some really good shows the last few times. You know, some really good shows. So I'm listening now, Angry. I'm listening. I just want to let you know.
Excellent. By the way, I have good news, Carol. Diane, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan, just answered your challenge. So that's beautiful. So that takes
fabulous. I'll get the money in the mail today, except I'll do it electronically, so it'll get there faster.
Okay, thank you very kindly. That takes us down to, like, 142? 102? 92? It's getting a little confusing here. Oh, let's see. 192, I think. I'm a little lost, but hopefully we'll get there, whatever it is.
I thought you were at 192.
Is that where we were? Yeah, okay. So 92 bucks to go. Hallelujah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. So basically $100 and we finish May to the good. By the way, let's see, we've got a number of people who've wandered in and joined the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Jenny in Fitzwalkerstan.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hey, I missed your Phyllis Schlafly, whatever you were talking about her earlier.
Yes.
2 days ago, I listened to her on our local Christian radio station, WBCY, who's been, like, the thorn in my side for, like, the last 30 years. She was insane. She was absolutely insane. I will send you the link, and you can, like, have your head explode.
Oh, dear God. I'll save that for the next really good hangover so I can hate myself properly.
Everything she said was just, like, crazy. Feminists and the immigrants, like, it's absolutely insane. And they just interviewed her, like, 2 days ago. So I'll send it. Maybe I'll share it in the chat, and everybody else can listen to it, too.
Bob, can I ask, if all these people are such a thorn in our side and drive us absolutely insane and upset us and bother us, why do we keep on engaging with these people? If they're not...
I don't engage with them.
But
no. I don't engage with them, but I think... Because WVCY, they were in charge of all the abortion clinic protests in the 80s and blah, blah. You know, they're like a pretty big political movement around here. They, you know, they influence people. And the, like the, I called them because there was a small town library that had gay, teenager gay books. And there was a woman from the small town said, I shouldn't have to babysit my children in the library. And these, you know, gay, you know, books for, written for teenagers that, you know, discuss about being gay shouldn't be in like, in the young adult section. And so I called him up. I'm like, oh, that's terrible. Blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, I was at the library with my daughter a couple of weeks ago and there were art books and there were naked women in there. And he's like, well, at least it wasn't written out. I said, no, it was worse. It was images. She could see them. And they hung up on me. So they knew I was like a troll. But they're very prominent in our neighborhood. They're very prominent in, like, you know, the dealings of what goes on. And they, you know, and they're doing a 20-week abortion ban here in Wisconsin. It's disturbing. It's disturbing. So it's, they irritate me, but I kind of view it as a know your enemy sort of tactic.
And that's exactly what it is, Jenny. If we run around out here and don't focus and don't pay attention to what these troglodytic booger eaters from the Moranosphere are up to, the next thing you know, you're going to turn around and they're going to own the country. Because that's their goal. Their goal is to set up an Iranian theocracy here on a Christian Reconstructionist model. You know, Jesus land.
They have to be called out and mocked. That's the only way to deal with these kind of people. You can't just let it go. That's I think the point, Larry. As far as, you know, thorn in the side Thursday and so, or thorn in the side Thursday and things like that.
Well, and remember, in Rules for Radicals, Saul Alinsky says that mocking these people is an extremely powerful tool.
Okay, I'll have to go get my copy on the shelf and see it. But I you know, it's just that talking about it, knowing that I know that it's nuts, and knowing that I know that they've had such an influence over the last 30 years. Drives me nuts. Drives me absolutely nuts, and I feel despair. So that's what I feel. But
yeah, I understand that, and it is very sad.
Yeah.
But knowing it, I think is, you know.
Mm-hmm. And just
ignorance is bliss. That's, we need to know what other people are thinking. I don't know. Does that sound too preachy? I'm sorry.
No, it doesn't, yeah. Jenny. And in point of fact, Larry, you know, so many of these stories have, you've pointed, you've noted on a number of occasions how alien, how strange, how bizarre these stories out of the right-wing religion industry are for you. And you've talked about how, you know, Berkeley's kind of a bubble.
That's right. That's exactly right. It is a bubble.
And if it is a bubble, then, you know, you could just kind of cruise along inside the Berkeley bubble and think that the rest of the world was like Berkeley. It ain't.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it was, but it ain't.
Well, you know, Berkeley has its problems too, but, you know, because sometimes people in Berkeley are kind of, you know, like if you don't agree with things the way people in Berkeley see things, you know, then somehow, you know, you're less than too. So, you know, there's a certain kind of liberal intolerance amongst some people, not amongst most people, but amongst some people, and so, you know, it's like obviously a number of people here have been influenced in their lives at some point by people from different communities that have really been intolerant of. I don't feel comfortable trying to speculate about it. All I know is that I live in a group with a group of people who I agree with most of the time, you know, generally all the time, and you know, they don't even agree with each other a lot of the time. So it's kind of like they're all radicals and they all believe in progressive ideas, but it depends upon whatever your own idiosyncratic brand of progressivism and whether or not your personality meshes with somebody else's personality and all kinds of other stuff. So it's crazy. I'm sorry, but you understand what I'm saying, Bob.
I do.
You know, I mean, everybody's progressive, but it's like people's own, you know, idiosyncratic personality quirks, you know, regardless of how they believe politically, and that's what happens at KPFA and at the Pacifica Network. And they, you know, and it's a mess. It's a mess. But I guess I'm better off here than I would be if I lived in Omaha. So, and I'm interested to know, you know, Wisconsin, where Vero and Jenny are, that was the birth of the progressive movement. It was where Bob La Follette came from, where Progressive Magazine came from, and John Nichols. So I don't understand why Wisconsin, all of a sudden, its right-wing side, where Joe McCarthy was from Aberdeen, why that particular side of the equation is tending to win out when Wisconsin has been historically one of the most progressive areas of the country. That state and Minnesota. Minnesota is another state like that.
Well,
so,
and let me just respond a little bit. And Jenny, you've got being there, you've got some expertise as well. First of all, a note coming from Barbie. She says, you know, change will never come if we don't know what sickness they possess. So there's that. And two, you say, why Wisconsin? Well, in many ways, Wisconsin can be said to have, in its better times, been more liberal than California, by a long shot. Wisconsin invented the Wisconsin idea, the notion that the state university should be a learning center for people, for a search for ways to make life better for all Wisconsinians, okay? And over the years, they have chipped away at it, the right wing has, because Wisconsin and the progressivism that was such an obvious success there was one of the single greatest dangers to right wing movement conservatism. I actually, one of the first times I was up there, and God, I just love it. Somebody put this a similar question to me. I think it was at Fighting Bob North up in Chippewa Falls. And I said, the answer to that is easy. If you can break the progressivism of the Wisconsin idea, you can break any state in the union. It might be a challenge, but it will render great rewards. Because after all, and I was looking for a little punchline here, where's the fun in making Alabama weirder? Okay, I mean, it becomes statistically meaningless to make a Mississippi or an Alabama or an Oklahoma more bizarre than it already is. The instruments don't exist by which you can measure that sort of thing. You follow me, Larry? But if you can destroy progressivism in the cradle where it was largely nurtured, Wisconsin, you can kill it anywhere in the United States. And that's why I keep standing, you know, lone voice in the wilderness, like, hollering out to our horn friends and family members, family commune congregation members in places like California and Oregon and Washington, saying, you know, the Koch brothers have done their filthy business in the rest of the country. You people, and I'm sorry for the you people, y'all have bullseyes on your backs and I don't think you even know it. It's going to be nothing to knock down California and knock down Oregon and knock down Washington, because they've already knocked down the rest of the country. You're not, and to anybody who shares your bubble in Berkeley, Larry, you're not safe. They are coming for you.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's exactly true, and it's such a disaster. It's like it's a real disaster to live in Wisconsin right now, because they're just basically decimating our state. And you know where decimating comes from? I always thought that.
Yeah, I actually do.
I love it. In the Roman
when a Roman legion was found not to have was found to have displayed cowardice, the general would go through the ranks and kill every tenth man.
And that's basically, so Scott Walker, I came back to Wisconsin. I lived in Wales, the country, for a while, and I came back to Wisconsin. I went back to college, and I somehow ended up in the honors program at UW-Milwaukee, which I have no idea how I ended up there. But anyway, so we had to read this book, A Nation of Victims. It was by Charlie Sykes, who is a local radio host, whose wife, which they are divorced, but now she's on the circuit. She was appointed by Bush to a federal circuit, Chicago circuit judgeship or whatever. Anyway, A Nation of Victims. And he talked about the woman who was, like, burned by coffee. Oh, it's a nation of victims. But McDonald's was, you know, making coffee illegally by making it too hot. You know, and she didn't even want to sue. So we have this, we have like in Milwaukee, we have, and Milwaukee and Madison has like these two little conservative radio hosts that people who live in their bubble, who don't think, who listen to them. Like all our politicians, like Scott Walker, Paul Ryan, they'll go on their shows constantly and not, and they won't, they will decline, interviews for the public radio stations, but they constantly go on there. So Scott Walker, there was a Scott Walker, I mean, obviously he's a college dropout. He only has this high school education. He was handpicked. There was a
It was Milwaukee County Manager. The county executive.
There was a alleged scandal of pensions for the county executive. And then they had a recall. Scott Walker was elected in a recall against Tom Ament, who was our county executive. So he's been their hand little picked puppet for years, since the early 90s. So it's not even like a 4-year plan, a 2-year plan. It's a 20-year plan. Mm-hmm. Scott Walker's on a 20-year plan. And I don't know. It's so distressing. I mean, I work at home, so I like listen. There's a thing called Wisconsin Eye, so we can watch all of the dealings in the state senate. And,
right, and see,
you know,
that I became familiar with Wisconsin Eye. It's a wonderful public service, and of course that's going to have to go.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's terrible. The DNR, they're like totally trashing all the scientists from the DNR.
Oh, for God's sakes. I mean, granted, you know, if we could devote an entire week of programs to the walking horror that is Scott Walker, you know, no one has yet bested Charlie Pierce in coming up with descriptive terms for people like Walker, and he refers to Scott Walker as the Koch brother, the goggle-eyed homunculus hired by the Koch brothers to run their Wisconsin, their subsidiary formerly known as Wisconsin. But, you know, just this last week, he said that he signed a transvaginal ultrasound mandate bill, you know, because he's worried about
that's
the fetus.
Cool.
Ultrasound because
cool.
It's a cool thing for women.
Yeah, it's super cool. When I was pregnant with my daughter, I had a transvaginal ultrasound. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Well, I mean,
yeah, and we have the 20-week ban that's probably going to go through. oh, but you know. So if you, and there's no thing for rape or incest. So if you, like, if you find out, and then I heard a doctor talking about it on public radio, I listen to it all the time, here, he was like, it's from the date of conception. He's like, there's no, you can't really find out the date, you know, there's really, I mean, that's an elusive date. And if you, and if a doctor performs an abortion, it's a class A felony.
Yes.
It's a class A fucking felony. And if you have to go to full term and you can't deliver the baby, you have to have a cesarean. What the fuck?
You know, Bob, I was reading in my Women's American History, you know, Women's America, which talks about American history from a woman's point of view, and they were saying that the whole anti-abortion movement started in the mid-19th century to control midwives and to keep people, to keep women. They wanted to stop the midwifery movement, and they also wanted to keep women in their homes. And that's the purpose of the anti-abortion. That was the purpose.
The whole purpose
of the anti-abortion movement.
Unless my learning was way off base, the anti-abortion movement was part of the anti-contraception movement, and both were intimately associated with the response to the women's suffrage movement. Because it's all about maintaining the patriarchy and making sure that women knew their place. You know, that's one of the reasons when I hear that silly-ass line, our democracy, I can't help but laugh. Somebody go find Susan B. Anthony's ghost and ask her about our democracy. Yeah, please.
Oh, you know what? Okay, I'm kind of like dominating here, but I don't know. You're not all my friends on Facebook, but have you guys ever heard of B. Richards?
No.
She is an... Oh, my God. She wrote this poem. She's an African-American poet from, I think, the 50s it was. And it was all about... It was, like, the most horrible thing I've ever read. Horribly... And it's horrible just because it was true. And it was all about, you were afraid to nurse your young lest the fallen breast offend your master's sight. And it was all about, like, black women, you know, being wet nurses for white women. And a white woman speaks of white woman. A black woman speaks of white womanhood. Oh, my God. It is the most... brutal thing I've ever read, I think, in my whole entire life.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I don't know. I'm just blathering on, but.
No, I'll you're not, no, 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 no,
oh,
no,
you're
no,
not blathering
no.
On
you are not, you are not blathering, Jenny. Not in the least.
Oh, good God. Everybody that I put it on Facebook, they're like, wow. Like, you can't even, you know, I mean, yeah, like, I know about white privilege. I know about everything. I'm accepting, and this just fucking punched me in the head. It was crazy. I will post it in the chat.
Well, okay. So, I'm going to ask a question that may be, it displays my lack of knowledge of the medical profession. But can that sort of probe be used for, like, having a look at things on the other end? And if they can, and Scott Walker thinks they're so goddamn cool, try it! You get my meaning?
I think so, Bob. I think so. I think ultrasounds can be used basically for just about any body part as long as you have the right adapter to, you know, go into whatever opening, let's say, you need to go into.
Well, and you know,
maybe
that's why Scott Walker thinks they're cool. Maybe he's had one. Maybe he liked it.
There was a comment on Facebook that said, I had one on my testicles. It didn't hurt at all. They're just a little jelly.
Oh, God.
Well, that's a little more external, though. Come on.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the transducer that looks like a 1950s electric razor.
Uh-huh. You know, Rick, I wanted to, Rick's from California, and so is Duncan. Everybody knows I'm kind of like a lifelong learner. But the thing is, I am a lifelong learner, and what I'm told by my some of the people over at my community colleges, the community colleges used to be a lot more about providing community lifelong learning, and they're not going to do that anymore. So my question is, but if all I know about is going to school, and if going to school provides me with some kind of feeling of empowerment, what do I do when the school says to me, you know, you've been in school too long, you have too many units, you're not going toward a degree, or you're not going out into the workforce, and you don't want to follow along with our with the way in which we're developing our educational system at this point in time, then what do I do? And is it true that this is happening in the community college movement, not only here in California, if I can get some verification from Rick, but also across the country?
Well, Larry, you know, I think it's a function of the limited resources that the states have. I know California went through its major, you know, fiscal crisis at the tail end of the governor's, or in the middle of the governor's term, around, what was it, 2009 to 11 or so. And I know that there were serious cutbacks in, you know, community college courses. They, I think, laid off some professors. You know, the number of people who could enroll was greatly decreased. So that may be, you know, partly a function of, you know, a California-centric issue. But I suspect that other states have a lot of problems, you know, with their funding. And I would be very surprised if states like, let's say, what is it, Kansastan, if they haven't cut back because of, you know, the screw-ups that Brownback has caused by, you know, the huge tax cut for the wealthy in that state, which basically caused there to be a huge deficit, which basically has to be, you know, taken care of on the backs of those less fortunate. So, you know, I would suspect that it's a function of, you know, the tightening of various state budgets. And maybe part of it, too, is a philosophy that, you know, the purpose of community colleges, you know, is to get you ready for the workforce as opposed to, you know, continuing education, adult learning, lifelong learning, that kind of thing. That's my take on it.
Rick, because there's a mindset out there that says, what in the hell does a ditch digger need with Shakespeare?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just, I guess it's
I'm not focus. Now, mind you, I'm not espousing that.
No, I know that. Oh, I know you. Yeah.
You were making a rhetorical point. We understand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's sort of like, you know, I mean, you know, I think part of the idea community colleges were founded was to just enrich the lives of citizens. And that ain't the purpose anymore. It's to basically, you know, provide more drones for the capitalist economy. I think there's been a shift in the focus of that.
Right. I mean, we use, here in West Virginia, just to give a really egregiously stupid example, we use community colleges to teach young men how to go and be coal miners because, you know, there's so many coal mining jobs. So you can go badly in debt learning to be a coal miner in southern West Virginia, at Southern West Virginia Community College or some such, and then you can get out with your red hat certificate, your newbie coal miner certificate, and never get work.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of good that does you, and, you know, like, you know, that's sort of like a local community college offering somebody, you know, classes in elevator operating. That industry doesn't exist anymore. What's the point?
Well, I can say my local community college, Shasta College, has a program for solar, and with the addition a few years ago of the Hatchet Mountain Wind Farm, they're training wind turbine maintenance.
Yeah, and I was about to ask that very question. You know, we do have some wind turbines in West Virginia, and you know what? To maintain them, somebody's got to come in from out of state.
Now, how godforsaken stupid is that?
You don't have any people trained in how to maintain?
How come the people that own the wind farm don't want to train people locally?
Duh.
It's about coal, I think.
You know, because wind and solar are just the fuel of the future. It don't really work right now.
But the thing is, folks, you know, the states don't want to make corporate people pay their fair share of taxes because they're frightened that if they try to force companies to pay more of the tax burden, that the companies are going to try to search for a better deal in some other state. But the point, when I called Norman Goldman once, he said, Larry, you know, my problem is that the state governments don't band together and decide that they're going to present a common front saying we are not going to allow companies to come in and play to force our state to be played off against another state to try to get another advantage just so that they don't have to pay taxes.
Right, and which all goes back, and Norman Goldman is right in that regard, and it all goes back to a book that I referenced a couple of weeks ago, namely Greg LeRoy's book, The Great American Jobs Scam. And it is a race to the bottom in which Alabama is pitted against Mississippi or Kentucky, and Indiana is pitted against Ohio, and California is pitted against Texas, and you got Jimmy Dick Perry running around saying, come on down to Texas. We got low taxes and low standards and low morals and low ethics and low government. Yeah, come on down here. You know, you can move all your workers from that filthy socialist paradise, California. You can move them down here to Texas, and they can breathe some of the filthiest air on earth. They can drink some of the filthiest water on earth, and you're going to love it. Don't mess with taxes.
And right? You make all kinds of money, and you make all kinds of profits, and then you'll be able to go off and invest them in, you know, whatever you invest them in, paintings or in whatever wealthy people that have too much money that they know what to do with. I don't know what they do with it, but then it's like that's what they're going to do. And it's like that doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything really in the long run to help the country, to help people, and all it ultimately
does. It doesn't
does,
do anything to do anything except line pockets and support shareholder profits. We have, for instance, just to give you an outrageous example of this, Larry, do you know who Cabela's are?
The
hunting and outdoor supply chain online, and they got stores all over the country. Well,
I'm sorry, I don't. Does Duncan or anybody else?
Same
thing as Bass Pro Shop.
Bass Pro Shop, Gander Mountain. Actually, Gander Mountain works on a more sustainable model, though, and when I got to buy that kind of stuff, I go to Gander Mountain. But,
and I'll tell you a story about Bass Pro Shop and Cabela's when you're done.
So Cabela's, to much fanfare, announced that they were going to come to West Virginia and build a store in Wheeling, West Virginia. And they job creators, right? And, of course, we gave them a sweetheart deal for coming to West Virginia. They came to Wheeling. And we told them that we would not ask them to pay any taxes. And they said, well, how are we going to do that? And they came up with a dodge. Now, when you walk into Cabela's, they got boots and rifles and all kinds of stuff. And every pattern and color of camo known to the human experience. But they've also got a bunch of stuffed bears and some antlers on the wall. And so, because they had some stuffed bears and mounted trout and stuff, they were designated, I kid you not, Larry, a museum. And therefore, pay no taxes.
Oh, some legislator or some really, really smart person who understands semantics just sort of came up with a designation, and then that became the reality. And then they created a situation whereby they didn't have to pay any taxes. Well, that's clever. It's also sick, but it's cleverly sick.
Yeah, and that, you know, happens all over the place. Now, Jenny, you said you've got a Bass Pro Shop story?
Yes, when Scott Walker, and the reason why Scott Walker continued to win was because they gerrymandered our state in 2010 because they got to redraw the districts, number one. Number two, they have a whole wetland. They changed the DNR wetland statistics. You can cover up a wetland X place, you know, X, but as long as you build one X, doesn't have to be in the same watershed. Like I live in the Atlantic watershed. I lived in Madison for a while, way out of my watershed. It goes to the Gulf of Mexico, you know. So I mean, we have like, you know, watersheds here in Wisconsin. So Bass Pro Shops, they wanted to build by Lambeau Field in Green Bay, and then people were complaining you're building over a watershed. But Bass Pro Shops were good stewards because, you know, if there aren't any watersheds, you don't have fishing, right? They said we're not going to go there, but Cabela's came in and built instead and covered over the watershed. And I hope they get flooded.
I love the way you. There was a certain merry jingle to your voice, Jen, and I hope they get flooded.
Well, you know something, Bob, and I don't know if Lottie's listening. He's probably in the chat room. But he keeps on saying to me, whenever I get desperate, whenever I do the same old sing-along thing, and also Sergi was saying the same thing to me, well, not the same thing, but something similar. But what Lottie would say, Larry, you have to understand something. It's going to keep on getting worse, and the only way that it's going to get better is if people lose what, you know, it's going to have to get really, really bad, and they're going to have to make buco bucks in profit, and there's going to have to be some real pain until people begin to wake up. If they don't, you know, as long as people in this country feel that they have something invested in this system and invested in whatever social and cultural arrangements that they're living under, and they're frightened that they're going to lose more by trying to fight back, they're not going to fight back, and it's going to get worse, and we're going to have some bankers get some bullets in their head, and this is what Bob was saying to me. So,
See, I would honestly prefer that we not use this broadcast for talking about anybody getting bullets anywhere.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's just
I you know, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I apologize. But you get the general sense of what I'm saying.
I do.
I'm sorry that I said that.
Well, no, I'm not beating up on you, Larry. It's just that I like broadcasting, and there is no better way to get a visit from those humorless guys in the black suits with the skinny black ties who talk to their wrists than to suggest that need to happen. Yes.
It's Betsy. You probably, okay. Can we also just this week refrain from wishing anybody get flooded? Half of Houston and half of Dallas are still underwater, along with a lot in between and many, many dead. I'm not wishing floods on anybody.
Well, I don't think Jenny was saying she wanted the store flooded.
Because they built it in the wrong place.
They built it on a wetland.
Yeah, I don't want getting flooded on anybody. But they were building on wetlands.
They were, in other words, they were kind of begging for
super
it.
Super important. They keep our ecosystem in place. And when you can't just cover a wetland and then build one in a different watershed. You know, like where I live, all my water goes out the St. Lawrence Seaway and goes to the Atlantic Ocean. 20 miles away from me, all the water goes down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. You can't cover a wetland in this watershed and build one in there. It just doesn't make sense. So I'm not saying anybody needs to be flooded, but it has happened because they've taken over what land?
Right, and I mean, for instance, I had the story a couple of nights ago in which all Bill Nye the Science Guy did was point out that climate change models kind of explain what's happening in Texas and, you know, in Wimberley and places like that. And somebody immediately, some right-winger immediately tweeted back at him, you know, calling him all kinds of names and telling him, you know, he needed to wait.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, Betsy, I understand and I appreciate the sincerity of what you just said, and it's real and it's true. But you live down there. What's it going to take? I mean, let me work from the imagery of your book, because it's y'all's, not mine. You know, Pharaoh goes through all of those, you know, at time after time, you know, frogs and locusts, rivers of blood, you know, and the idea being, what does it take to make this guy see reason? How many, I feel like the conservative right wing, et cetera, in Texas are like Pharaoh, Betsy. And, you know.
Bob, they're worse than Pharaoh. So. If you look at Dallas, I think it's near Dallas. I don't think it's Dallas itself, where they have had all of the earthquakes, and they voted to the county voted to ban fracking.
Yes.
And then immediately the state of Texas said that it's now illegal for a county to ban fracking.
And suddenly the state of Texas wants to be some big government and tell municipalities what they can't do. Yeah, you know, in the Exodus story, there's a reference to the fact that God hardened the heart of Pharaoh. Well, so has he just hardened the brains of Texas Republicans? Is that what we're talking about?
I kind of thought that Texas Republicans were pretty hard-headed to start with, but...
Well, I'm not talking about stubborn, I'm talking about stupid.
Yeah, it's rocks for brains. I don't know.
Because, I mean, so we got fracking earthquakes, we got floods, we got drought. I mean, Texas is really getting down to rivers of blood and frogs and locusts in order to try to explain to them that, you know, that climate change is real and there is a problem.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, you talk about Bill Nye. He was on the Ed Show tonight. And he was using a comparison to a person that doesn't think smoking causes cancer.
Yeah.
That was how he was using the comparative. He was on just a short little, if you get a chance, you might.
Right, or somebody, a diabetic who thinks that they can just Hershey bar their way to happiness.
Mm-hmm.
We've got another perspective coming in from Barbie. She says, I've been flooded, and I could give a shit if the corporate ogres that be get flooded.
Okay. Bob, I just wanted to say I was being figurative when I was saying that.
I understand.
Earlier, and I don't want the FBI folks coming after us.
Don't dwell on it. Agent Fred knows we're liberals. We're not serious. We don't do that kind of thing.
But the thing is I want people to know that I am really frustrated, and sometimes the frustration is so real that it hits a point of truth in me, or what I feel is my innermost truth, and I just express it, and that's where that's at. So I'm sorry, but you know, they somewhere those conservative folks have to get that we're really, really, that it's something has to happen for things to change.
Yeah, and that's the nature of the inquiry that I'm making here, Larry. What does it take? And I mean, the level of dysfunction and disconnect is just so profound. You don't know if there is anything that will actually work. I mean, I know I talk about it all the time, but I'm reminded after the Upper Big Branch disaster when CNN stuck a camera in some brand newly made widow's face. And said, well, you know, are you mad at the company? And she said, well,
We always knowed it was dangerous mining coal.
And, you know, how are you not marching on Massey headquarters? Why doesn't CNN have to chase you down with the camera? January 9th, 2014, 300,000 people poisoned, and not even 1% of them show up at the state capitol to demand justice.
Well, they told me that if I tried to go to that state, I'd just be looked at like I was an outside agitator, and they'd hate me more for going in there and trying to point out that they should be organizing rather than if I just sat there and just sort of, you know, and if I didn't try to tell anybody what to think or how to think, because there's nothing
you cannot, cannot come from somewhere else and go tell the locals how to think. You can go and present facts. You can go and present information. You can go and stand in support. You can go and maybe share with them facts and science that maybe they haven't heard. But you cannot go and tell them how to do it. People are experts in their own lives. And you've got, and unfortunately, the right wing doesn't follow those rules, and they will go, well, you know what, you can have economic prosperity if you'll just keep them women's from getting abortions. This is all just God, you know, if the economy collapses, that's just God telling us that women shouldn't be able to take that little contraceptive pill.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work on you, Larry, but you'd be surprised the number of millions of Americans that it does work on.
Well, like you mentioned Saul Alinsky earlier, and in that very same book that you mentioned, Rules for Radicals, he said, if you go to a place and you're trying to organize a community, you go there and find out where their head's at. And if they're not willing to listen to you, if you've got long hair and a beard, because this was
then
written...
get a haircut.
Get a haircut. And don't try to moralize. Don't try to give them...
Right, because, I mean, I've seen this up close in real world, Larry. You know, people come into West Virginia, and, you know, I sat in meetings in congressional offices where I was the token hillbilly, okay? And people from somewhere else would look at me in a meeting in a congressman's office and say, we need to help these poor people, and gesture toward me. Okay? I mean, Saul Alinsky's right. And I've learned what I know about it by careful observation and trying to be sensitive to these issues. But you'd be surprised the number of people who don't get it. You know, we've tried to get some people to get haircuts and baths who are trying to work against mountaintop removal in our communities, and they, you know, and Treebeard and Celery look at us and go, ah, dude, you're like oppressing me. Not bathing is part of my culture. Hand to God. It happened.
Yeah, well, that's what, you know, you have to meet people where they live, and if you can't, I guess you're not in a position to be able to, you know, you can't go in and say, even if you mean well, even if your heart's in the very best place known to the human race, if you try to convince somebody who doesn't feel like they want to be convinced, and I'm going through that right now, they're not going to want to be convinced, and they're likely going to work more or harder against you, even though you have the best of intentions. Because as far as they're concerned, you don't have the best of intentions. You're hurting them.
And by the way, Larry, I had a note from Barbie. She said, Larry, everybody knows your statement was innocent, so don't beat yourself up. Listen, I have an apology to offer. I announced the stress line earlier, and I've noticed this over the course of a week, and I apologize for not figuring it out. But we got a problem with the stress line. And it's not that it doesn't work or anything. It's just I've got to call the carrier and get something sorted out about how quickly it rings over to voicemail. I had to turn off the call waiting a while back because people were getting that annoying beep, you know, of call waiting in the middle of their calls, and that just sucked. But for some reason or another, it just rings and then it goes to voicemail.
and I apologize for that. But I do finally have Kevin on the stress line. Good evening, Kevin.
Good evening. Larry, I just want to comment on one thing you said earlier, and you talked about being a lifelong learner. Aren't we, or shouldn't we all be lifelong learners? I'm not saying it's the whole point of life, but that should be a major part of your life. When you end your life, you should know more than when you began life. And you don't have to worry about anything happening from our side. If things continue like they're going now, it will implode on the other side of their own doing and accord. The frustrating part is what you talked about of trying to show them a better way and then refusing to even consider it. Principally because, as Bob says, the cable's still on. And, you know, I feel the same frustration here in the Springs, but, you know, that's just the way it is. And sometimes it's like a child. You can tell it all you want for him not to put his hand on the stove, but until he does it one time, you know, that child's got to learn one way, and you hope it's not the hard way, but sometimes some children have to do it that way. And unfortunately, with this group of Republicans we've got, you know, they apparently, they feel they're bound and determined, as my mother used to say, they're bound and determined to learn the hard way. So, you know, don't continue on with what you're doing and, you know, try to make the world a better place from your end, but, you know, because you are making a difference in the little things that you do.
Hey, Larry, thank you. That is just profoundly decent, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
Larry, when I heard you talking earlier about being a perpetual student, I was reminded of something, and I'm not trying to be personal or anything. Do you ever read just for fun? I mean, just read something that has absolutely no socially redeeming value whatsoever, except for the fact that it gives you pleasure. I mean, it's not an accusation. It's a real question. It's not rhetorical. Are you there, Larry? Am I here?
You're here.
Yes, Bob, you're here.
Okay, because I asked that question because when Larry mentioned being a perpetual student, I thought about one of my favorite classic science fiction novels. And I think Larry might actually get a big kick out of it.
I always wonder if Larry's going to run out of classes to take at this college he goes to.
Nah, I don't think so. but it's by the famed award-winning science fiction author Roger Zelazny, Zelazny, and it is called Doorways in the Sand. And I won't give anything away about it, but if you're listening, Larry.
I didn't know I was muted. Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. The setup to it is that there's a guy who has been a perpetual student because his uncle's will said that he would receive a stipend for as long as he was a student. So it's gotten to the point where he's had to be very, very creative about making sure that he doesn't screw up and get a degree. And it goes from there. Doorways in the Sand, Larry. Roger Zelazny. It's science fiction, and it is a blast.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And, of course, Duncan knows that I have gone to school for a long time. And, you were making a rhetorical comment, Duncan, but the only courses that I haven't really taken at a community college or any college are the math courses, the science courses, technical courses, and business courses, and taken most of everything else. Thank you.
They should give you an honorary degree, Larry, for all the courses you've taken, if nothing else.
No, because then he couldn't take any more courses.
Well, that's true.
then I have to go to graduate school, and I already have a BA. Then I'd have to go to graduate school, and I'm concerned about the fact that I would have more pressure on me. But I'd have to have a purpose and have to feel that there was a reason for me to be in graduate school in order for me to undertake the struggle to get through. So
yeah, but why can't you sort of sneak into graduate courses as an undergrad and maybe save yourself a few bucks?
At Cal, I could probably do that if I was nice enough. I'm sure that there would be some professors that would be more than happy to allow me to audit. They don't allow auditing at a community college, at least not in this district. They just don't, because they don't want to deal with liability. You know, they don't want me to have me sit there and not be an actual student where they can get money for my being there. And then they don't want to if something happens to me and I'm not an actual student where they're getting money from the state, they don't want to have to pay they don't want to have to deal with the liability. That's all. Okay. Thank you for letting me speak so much during this time period.
Oh, don't worry. Larry, Barbie just said, there's not anybody in the Horn family I wouldn't raise bail money for. So, you know, that goes to sort of show the cohesiveness.
Speaking of bail money,
yes.
Does anybody have an update on what's going on with Sergi? I think he had his hearing yesterday.
Yes.
Devin
was saying that according to someone who knows Sergi, who's in contact with Devin, that Sergi's been lucky enough to get a really, really good lawyer. So and beyond the fact that this particular person is saying that Sergi has a really, really good lawyer, we don't know anything else.
I suspect that the lawyer may have requested a continuance to kind of get his arms around the case if need be, because if he was recently retained or recently appointed. So we might not know for another month or so, or longer even. Who knows? You know, wheels of justice kind of grind slowly, especially when you're under them.
No, we'll let you know when we get an update from Devin.
Cool.
After hours.
Okay, I'll just say this. It may be really rough for him. I mean, there's no way in that situation. There's no way that a situation like that isn't rough. But this is the third time he's been revoked on that probation.
Oh, I thought it was only his second. That's not good. Yeah. He's looking at, is it a max of 2 years left?
Well, maybe it is the second. I'm not.
Okay.
But, you know, it's. I did a little.
Although this one is kind of ticky tacky, I think, you know? So maybe it's sort of what do we call in California, a floater or whatever, or a wobbler, I guess they call it, you know?
Yeah.
Like they can either be charged as a misdemeanor or a felony for purposes of like three strikes and so forth. And
yeah, I don't.
You know, if it's not a big deal, they'll charge it as a misdemeanor, so you don't get the third strike. You know.
Yeah.
So.
But you know, anything like this in Texas is frankly, a parking ticket in Texas is no laughing matter, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to be facing the Texas justice system, if you can call it that.
And from what I'm told, Denton is a really, really backward place. So, I mean, you know, Texas is backward anyway, I suppose. I don't know if Betsy's on, but from what I understand, Denton is really backward.
I'm here. I've never been to Denton. I have only one friend who lives there, but she's in charge of the liberal caucus for her county, so I have no idea. She's probably not representative.
Well, boy, howdy, here's Roger from Minnesota, and I've been to Denton, and I know an interesting fact about Denton, and that's the following. They organized to try to put controls on the fracking activity.
It was, right, Roger. It was.
Allow me to finish my sentence. There are some 270 wells, fracking wells, causing great public health damage in the township or city of Denton. And non-liberal people got together to attempt to establish a municipal law to control the fracking and even ban it. And then that got subverted at the state level. But it's an interesting fact that conservative Denton was awoken by the situation.
Yes, that was what I was saying. It was Denton that passed the no fracking ban, and it was the Texas state government that then declared that municipalities could not stop fracking.
On the subject of fracking, Richard Wolf on his program said that there is a particular oil baron in Oklahoma, Mr. Ham, who has gotten in touch with the University of Oklahoma, and he's trying to control the geologists that are hired by the University of Oklahoma in Norman, because they're coming out with all kinds of information that is, you know, putting a bad light on fracking. So what Oklahoma did apparently is they made it, you know, you can't complain about fracking in Oklahoma. This guy's name is Ham. I don't know anything about him, but he doesn't want to see any research being done at Norman by any of the geologists that might counter his ability to make money.
What could possibly go wrong with fracking and, you know, causing earthquakes? I mean, really, you know, what's the big deal here? I don't understand. Please explain, somebody.
Yeah, well, it's a little earthquake here and there. I mean, it's not like there's any big buildings in Oklahoma or anything.
Yeah, and there's no San Andreas Fault to worry about or anything like that, you know.
I mean, except for the fact that there are big buildings in Oklahoma. But over the years, and the Californians can certainly speak much more confidently than I to this. Earthquake damages have been at least mitigated by the fact that when buildings go up in California now, they are engineered for earthquakes, right? I mean, some buildings actually kind of sit on springs. Am I correct?
Absolutely. They're
yes,
very
Bob.
Carefully engineered, yeah.
We have the highest earthquake standards
in the world.
Well, certainly as high as Japan, let's say.
Yeah.
Maybe
well,
better
see,
than I don't know.
Oklahoma doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the Plains Indians that extended down into Oklahoma did use teepees, and I do believe those are approved for earthquakes.
You have to have seismic restraints on your water heater when you build a house.
Right, and I think the newer houses have to have automatic shutoff valves for your natural gas as well. But that's kind of been grandfathered in for the older home. So if you buy a existing home, you have to make sure that if it was built before a certain year, probably the mid-80s, if you want to put one of those automatic gas shutoffs, you've got to put it in.
When we had the flood, I mean, PG&E was out here the next day checking all their gas meters because they've got something to, I mean, when they knew the meters were flooded, so they had to check everything because they got the we have a smart meter on a gas or gas meter too. And with my air conditioning compressor that sits outside too, I went out and I looked at the little PG&E box too, and it ain't lighting up anymore. So I called PG&E too. Besides getting a serviceman for the air conditioner.
Right, so let's just, and granted, this is hypothetical and speculative, but you've got all of that in California because people acknowledge science and recognize the reality of living in an earthquake zone and attempt to mitigate it as such.
Mm-hmm.
Now, consider how many natural gas and oil pipelines flow to and through Oklahoma. Don't the northern and southern legs of Keystone XL, don't they meet in Oklahoma?
I think so.
Would you expect those things to be engineered for earthquakes?
in Oklahoma?
No, you wouldn't expect it, but they do have to now. They've basically made themselves a seismic zone by all the excessive fracking they've been doing in that area.
But this is Oklahoma, where they hate job-killing regulations, and the free market will take care of everything.
It's the home of Senator Snowball, I think.
It absolutely is. So do you think that they're what odds would you give on the idea that there might be actual earthquake protection on any of the infrastructure in Oklahoma?
I'd say about the same odds as the Chicago Bulls have to win the NBA championship this year.
That good?
That bad?
No, I was being facetious.
Yeah, no.
And they probably don't use pipe pigs as much as other places either.
Right, right. And even those pipe pigs for the corroded old pipes, those can actually cause problems, you know? You know, it's just, I mean, there is no pipeline that's totally spill-proof or foolproof. That's why this whole Keystone XL thing is such insanity. I mean, the entire, you know, Midwest, the upper Midwest, depends on the Oglala Aquifer for its water for drinking and agriculture. And, you know, they really want to befoul that? That makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I saw part of Rick Santorum's speech the other day. He said he was for the Keystone XL pipeline.
Well, I'm for those 50 full-time jobs it's going to create and destroy, you know, water for how many millions of people, you know? What, 50 million people?
Mm-hmm. Jobs! Yeah. Hey, the time has...
Well, one thing about climate change, it's really a job creator.
Whether you acknowledge it or not. Exactly. I hate to say it, but I'm going to have to close things off. We've run right up against the end of the program. The program itself has flown by. This is one of those where-did-it-go affairs. So I want to extend my sincere thanks to everyone who has helped us climb up out of the hole we got into. I think we are at or near, maybe within $50 or so. I'm kind of, well, you know how, you know me and the gazettes and the ciphering. Of the goal we were at. Thank you very kindly, Carol in Australia, for the challenge that got the ball rolling this evening. Thank you very kindly to Byron, and thank you to Dan, thank you to Roger, Mo Liberal, thank you Jones so very much. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Carol Baker. Thank you. I feel like I missed one, and I it'll take just a second here. Hold on. Can't let this go by. And thank you, Wesley. Thank you, Joyce. And thank you, Emilio. That's quite an effort put forward to end May in good terms. Thank you, all of you who participated in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Jenny. Susie, we will hear from you yet. Thank you, Larry, and again, thank you, Carol. Thank you, Rick, and thank you always to Sparky for moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Moran Monday is coming sooner than we know, and dear God, we've already got our first nominee. They're beginning to line up early, aren't they? Again, have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Bye, y'all.